Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to episode 76 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kesslering.
Today is lovely Thursday, July 9th, 2020. Not recording this on a Friday as usual because tomorrow we have our second annual Calgary Stampede party, right? The Accelerate party?
Yeah, it's exciting. It should be a good time. Obviously, we don't have the Stampede this year, but it will still be good to enjoy it with some of our investors.
Yeah, it's great to have investors and clients out to celebrate, have some food and drinks on a nice Friday afternoon. And the other thing is, you look at what's happening in the U.S. and coronavirus cases are just out of control. They now have over 60,000 per day, over 3 million cases in the U.S. and some cities have tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of ongoing cases. I think the number of people sick right now are like 2 million in the U.S. And in Canada, we're a completely different environment with about 300 new cases per day and roughly 30,000 people who are currently infected. And a city like Calgary, I think there's about, maybe 40 per day and about 200 and something that are currently infected with COVID-19. So it's great to be able to get out there and live a normal life and have drinks with friends and colleagues and things of that nature. So hopefully in the U.S., anyone from there listening, man, wear your masks. It's a great idea. And let's get through this. Mask isn't all that bad. Do your social distancing and then we'll all get our freedoms back. But I digress. Let's get into the action this week. And something really, really important happened this week, something that I've been waiting a damn long time to see. And Warren Buffett, the greatest investor of all time, finally made a move as Berkshire Hathaway struck a $10 billion deal. Does this acquisition signal that Buffett is anti-ESG? That's right. This deal involved natural resources and is an interesting swap in the environmental, social, and governance angle. Then we wanted to chat about what's happening in Chinese stocks. They entered into bubble territory this week after the state-directed media and government basically ignited the speculative rally. Is this stock surge justified? Lastly, we are bringing up a file that we talked about a couple months ago. This is the Torstar bid. It's an M&A situation. A rival investor group emerged with a higher bid. If you note, if you're a long-term podcast listener, Torstar was the company being taken over for a negative enterprise value. So we're not surprised to see a higher bid come for this one. We're going to chat about, is this going to start a bidding war? But first, let's touch on this big Warren Buffett deal. Finally got out the elephant gun, stepped up to the plate and swung. But this isn't one of those elephant-sized deals he was looking for. As you recall, Berkshire has over $130 billion in cash. And this was just a $10 billion deal, of which they paid $4 billion in cash and assumed roughly $6 billion of debt. So I wouldn't classify it as one of these elephants he's been hunting for, but perhaps more like a deer or a gazelle, kind of, provide something nice to put on the wall and maybe some good meals or something. But this deal, Berkshire Hathaway announced the acquisition of Dominion Energy's natural gas assets for 10 bilski. That's right. They're getting, for this cash, 7,700 miles of pipelines, 900 billion cubic feet of natural gas storage, and other natural gas infrastructure. Kind of like a drop in the bucket because Berkshire Hathaway is a massive energy investor on the infrastructure side. So this $10 billion deal just adds to a $100 billion energy segment at Berkshire. It gives the company additional heft in the growing natural gas industry, which roughly doubles its market share in natural gas distribution. Good valuation on this one, 10 times EBITDA. Buffett's always a value investor, no matter what he says, irrespective of focusing on business quality and moat and all those things. It's kind of nonsense. Just watch what he does, not what he says, because here, just buying cheap stocks at 10 times EBITDA, cheap assets, significantly less than the market, and even less than comps, I believe. In terms of historical acquisitions, this was actually Berkshire's largest deal in 4 years. In 2016, they bought Precision Cast Parts for $37 billion, which was a pretty giant deal at the time. One dynamic that I wanted to touch on with respect to this Berkshire deal was that of ESG. Now, ESG refers to investing taking into account environmental, social, and governance issues. Now, that's become super, super hot from a marketing perspective. Many clients, many investors want to invest with an ESG bias. Meanwhile, many investors, fundamental investors, tongue-in-cheek, they call ESG eye roll, sneer, and groan because some are skeptical. They don't believe that it leads to better returns. In fact, if you're limiting your investment environment, that actually could lead to worse returns over the long term. And really, many believe that investors are doing it just to build assets, not trying to maximize returns, just looking for those marketing dollars to see AUM grow. However, if we look at performance of ESG over the, say, like the last 5 years, it has outperformed the market. And that's basically just for a couple of basic reasons. Number one, ESG by nature is underweight oil and energy, and oil stocks have been the worst sector by far for the past 5 years. And counterbalancing that, ESG is super overweight tech, and tech has been hot over the last 5 years, outperforming dramatically. And the other thing that I saw a comment from BlackRock on ESG, because they made a huge entrance into ESG investing, is just the momentum. As it more and more people demand ESG, more and more capital floods into that, leads to more and more inefficiencies in pricing of securities. And ESG stocks, those that are rated high on a scale of ESG metrics, get bid up and bid up. Meanwhile, those ranking low get sold off, such that you get this massive value divergence and this momentum effect on the ESG stocks. So what I see what's happening here is that Dominion Energy is trying to get blessed with the notion of being an ESG company. They're an energy infrastructure company, and their target is to reach net zero emissions by 2050. So divesting their natural gas infrastructure assets to Berkshire certainly makes sense in trying to get in with into bed with these ESG investors. Now, if you look at the opposite, Berkshire Hathaway is basically taking the anti-ESG approach. If we look at how Buffett invests, he's old school. And ironically, I refer to old school as being focused on fundamentals, focused on cash flow, and valuing an asset based off a discounted cash flow analysis, i.e., you know, how much cash flow will this asset yield to me per annum? And that's how he values assets. But many market participants these days, with ESG so hot, fundamentals don't really matter all that much. A lot of investors and even companies are going for the story. And right now, ESG makes a great story. And if you have a great story, you do get a premium multiple in the market. Now, who knows how long that's going to last? This interesting market environment where fundamentals don't really matter, cash flows don't matter, where the market's rewarding money-losing businesses with no path to profitability. That's the environment we're in, and it's gone on longer than most fundamental investors would have thought. But who really knows? It could, I guess, theoretically go on forever. However, if you look at the old Ben Graham quote, in the short term, the market's a voting machine, and in the long term, it's a weighing machine, just referring to the fact that at some point, the market and investors are going to go back to valuing assets based off cash flows and not putting nearly as much into, is this a good story? Does this help with the marketability of my stock or my fund? And, you know, will it help get it to trade higher? Will it help me to gain more assets under management and get a better ESG score? So it's a really interesting trade-off where Buffett's effectively buying the cash flows, Dominion selling this asset at a discount to get that ESG blessing. And it really goes to show where the market's heading this year. And if we look at share price performance, I mean, Berkshire has struggled, down about 20% year to date. And Dominion Energy, I mean, they're not doing so hot either. On news of the deal, they actually dropped 7%, so investors weren't necessarily picking up that ESG vibe off this deal. But nonetheless, great to see as a long-term fan and shareholder of Berkshire Hathaway. Love seeing Buffett finally do a deal. I was kind of disappointed seeing him go through the entire first quarter, the biggest bear market since 2008, without him doing a deal. So we finally got it done. Mike, what are your thoughts on Berkshire's deal here, $10 billion?
Yeah, with especially with Buffett, looking at the pandemic and his lack of action so far, I mean, really just the Fed stepped in as the lender of last resort instead of him being able to step in like in 2008 and make favorable deals where he was able to generate really good returns off of. Instead, you had the airlines were able to get money that was a lot better situation, while it was just more favorable terms for them through the Fed and government aid, as opposed to going to a private investor such as Buffett.
Yeah, exactly. I think what the coronavirus pandemic did is struggling corporations, in which you go back 10 years, Buffett would be their first call. Now he's number two. And who's first? Well, Jay Powell of the Federal Reserve, right?
Exactly. And the government itself as well. The Trump government as well. And so you had two parties that, well, those two first parties, those would be the first calls, and then Buffett after. And it's just interesting. So it's just kind of changed the game a little bit. But you do make a good point, though, with regards to ESG. I've seen some interesting tweets recently. I believe Eric Balanchunas from Bloomberg had made comments about Berkshire just being the anti-ESG firm, as well as Amazon and Netflix would be others, that there still is quite a bit of value. And I believe Bloomberg had done some back testing on the anti-ESG basket over, I believe it was since 2013, or this was back in late 2019. So as of the end of 2019, I believe it had outperformed the top ESG basket, which was interesting to note.
For sure.
Over that time period. Now that's just a 7-year time period. So it would be interesting to see something more long.
Yeah, I think there is a mutual fund called the Vice Fund, and they buy like tobacco and alcohol and things of that.
But yeah, no, in terms of Buffett, you know, this doesn't put much of a dent in his cash pile. Looking at pro forma Berkshire Energy, that component of the business, I found an interesting stat that now they will account for 18% of interstate nat gas transmission, which is up from 8% prior to the deal, assuming that it closes. A couple other things I did want to touch on, first being, I did have a question from one of our listeners wondering why we wouldn't be involved as a merger arbitrage fund, why we wouldn't be involved in a deal like this where it's an asset sale. And that's just very simply is just that in an asset purchase, there's no real way to isolate just that value through a trade. And so it really isn't an arbitrage opportunity as it would be when there's a whole company being purchased. Yeah. It's just not very easy to isolate. So that's why it's just not, it's outside the purview of a merger arb fund. You'll get special situations funds that will look at things such as that. They'll look at asset purchases or turnarounds, spin-offs, things of that nature, that are other corporate events that they see an undervalued security, basically. But that's just outside of the realm of a typical merger arb fund. Now, the last thing that I did want to bring up is that this, obviously, being in the energy space, is a deal that has Greg Abe, the vice chairman of Berkshire's non-insurance operations and longtime CEO of Berkshire Energy.
And future CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, right?
Yeah, that's why I was bringing it up. He also is from Edmonton.
Yeah.
So he is a little Canadian flair for Berkshire, for us Berkshire junkies. Now, that's what I was going to ask. Do you still think he's going to be the successor to Buffett? Because my pick overall, which I think is somewhat of a dark horse, is Todd Combs. I think he could come on and take over that where Ajit Jain and Greg Abel would continue to oversee the operational companies whereas a capital allocator could perhaps take over as CEO. But do you still see Greg Abel as the most likely successor to Buffett, Julian?
Yeah, I think that's a good bet. I'd probably put it at around 75%, but ultimately only the Berkshire Hathaway board knows. So it will be interesting to find out. Hopefully we don't find out for a long time because, you know, we're wishing that Warren can continue to lead Berkshire Hathaway for quite a while yet. The thing that I thought, yeah, 120-year-old Buffett still doing deals. Maybe he'll hit that elephant at some point, that elephant-sized deal that he's been aiming for all these years. Interesting stat that Berkshire will own 18% of all natural gas infrastructure. So clearly here, they're pot committed to the anti-ESG play. Wanted to touch on Chinese stocks. Now, what happened here was bullish commentary came out from China's state-run media, and clearly their government, a lot of the time it's just political and it's posturing. What's happening here is that the government wants to push up equities, want to show that, you know, we're doing great, our economy is great. You know how Donald Trump always likes to talk about NASDAQ hitting new high, Dow hitting new high, etc. Well, it seems like China's taken a page from his playbook, because now the CSI 300, the benchmark stock market index in China, it rose about 10% this week with a massive 6% rally on Monday. Its currency also rallying its strongest level since March. And it's not based on fundamentals. What we have is the Chinese government's desire to project an image of economic strength after the coronavirus, which was born from China. It tanked the entire global economy into recession, one of the worst recessions of all time. And so it's very interesting timing for China to come out and do this. More evidence of a speculative stock bubble happening. Margin loans used by investors to finance stock purchases have hit a five-year high, and margin loans are just a signal of speculative trading activity as investors are borrowing more and more money to buy trading securities. And I wanted to make this parallel. The current state-led bull run, it's similar to what happened back in 2015, where you had this government-mandated stock market rally. And that, it lasted for a little bit, but it ultimately ended in tears when the stock market index tanked more than 40% from its peak of the 2015 rally. So as they say, history doesn't repeat, but it does often rhyme. Interesting stat on the current bull run, $1 trillion market cap in equities have been added in 8 days. That's $1 trillion out of nowhere. It's just a speculative fervor, in my opinion, not necessarily justified by any sort of fundamentals. Clearly, Chinese economy still struggling. What do you think of this crazy price action in Chinese stocks?
Yeah, and it's just, it kind of comes back to your initial point with Berkshire. It is that the stock market isn't the economy. We like to think, and over the long run, there is a pretty high correlation, but especially in the short run, it is not reflective of the economy, and it can decouple quite substantially. And if you look at here, I mean, just like year to date, the Shanghai Composite is up almost 15%, which is crazy, right? In the middle of a pandemic, and really all those gains, like you had mentioned, Julian, are since the end of June in the last few days. And another thing that you had mentioned, and in 2015, that really was on the state media encouraging stock market ownership, and it was really just to mask, like you had said, it's just to mask the economic outlook weakening. But what you're seeing right now is just a lot of margin being used. Right now, I believe it was, I'd seen an estimate that 12% of the trading volume this month was using margin, and that's compared to 8% in June. But then when you look, comparing it to the 2015 peak, I believe it was Morgan Stanley that estimated that margin finance and the margin lending was equivalent to, in a dollar amount, 4% of the stock market capitalization in China.
Mm-hmm.
And if you compare that, that's actually compared to 10% at the peak in 2015. So I guess what that says is that
it's got a long way to go.
Yeah, that it could effectively, you know, double the amount of margin financing in terms of its relation to market capitalization. I believe right now it is right in absolute dollar amount. It is right at the peak of 2015. But when you look at it on a relative basis to market capitalization, still has quite a ways to go. So despite being a bubble, bubbles still do can, I shouldn't say in absolute terms, but they can continue to increase substantially more than what seems rational at the time. So yeah, it does look to be a bubble right now, but that doesn't mean that there's going to be a mean reversion anytime soon necessarily.
That's a good point. We're not necessarily encouraging investors to stay away, just expressing caution. But in bubbles, those can be great times to make money. Whenever I think of a bubble, I think of the George Soros quote. He's one of the greatest macro traders, if not the greatest macro trader of all time. He said, "When I see a bubble forming, I rush in to buy." And that's somewhat counterintuitive. Usually people want to be selling bubbles and staying away because it could quickly reverse. But as you indicated, these things tend to gather momentum and go up over time and continue. George Soros's strategy was try to get involved in the middle of it and sort of ride it for as long as he can and then sort of exit. But yeah, he would rush in to buy, he would add fuel to the fire to keep that momentum going and kind of get out, sort of a musical chairs type dynamic there. Obviously, he was phenomenal at doing that given his historical track record in investing. So certainly, I'm not indicating that any trader out there can be George Soros, but keep that in mind as a potential trading strategy. Interesting stock market bubble happening in real time in China. So if you're interested,
especially if you're going short, is to keep that in mind.
Yeah, don't do that.
If you're thinking that, hey, this is a bubble and I'm going to short it, do be prepared that, hey, it can go up another 100%, right?
Oh, man, or 1,000%. I've seen so many bears get slaughtered on, for example, Tesla. Clearly a bubble stock, a story stock, and obviously overvalued, but that hasn't mattered in 10 years. And exactly. Stock IPO'd, what, around $30? And now it's like nearly $1,500 a share, I believe. And it continues to go up. So there's really no cap on where things can go or how irrational things can get or how long it can last. So there's the famous quote that said, the market can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent. So it would definitely encourage investors not to short a bubble because that's a great way to quickly go broke. Wanted to finish up on a really interesting M&A situation, that one that we have covered on the podcast before, but now this one got a heck of a lot more interesting. And you know, one of my favorite things in the world is a bidding war, right?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, we love a good bidding war.
Here, we have a bidding war, potential bidding war brewing. It's not official yet, but man, Canada continues to be a great market for arbitragers. Initially, earlier this year, there was the ferocious bidding war for TSX-listed Guyana Goldfields, which was a massive win for arbitragers who got involved. I believe if you got in after the initial bid came out, I think that was around 80 cents, and now it's at $1.80. So you more than doubled your money very quickly. It is a sizable position in the Accelerate Arbitrage Fund, which we bought on day one. So a big win for us there on Guyana Goldfields. Now another potential bidding war may be emerging as an investor group led by two brothers, Matthew and Tyler Proud, and I'm really tempted to make a bad pun here, but I'm going to stay away. Anyway, these two brothers, they submitted a 72-cent cash per share offer for newspaper company Torstar. As listeners recall, Torstar is a current merger arbitrage candidate. They have a friendly acquisition deal to be acquired by Nordstar Capital, which is another group of two investors paying 63 cents per share, roughly $51 million deal. And why this deal was so interesting and controversial to us when it first came out is that, you know, everyone knows newspapers are a dying business, and Torstar, the producer of the Toronto Star, in addition to other media properties, it was in a long-term decline. The stock had been absolutely crushed, but it was trading way below its net cash value. It was an old-fashioned Ben Graham net-net. And then Northstar Capital came along, paid, a decent premium for the stock, 58% to get to 63 cents per share. But, you know, how much net cash on hand, net of debt, do they have in their balance sheet? Like closer to 80 cents, right? Our thoughts was that the Torstar board was effectively giving away the company for less than free, and we thought shareholders would have been better off liquidating the company and just paying out dividends. So it's really nice to see someone potentially recognize that value or recognize a value that's less that's greater than negative 20 million. So that's good to see. Now, this was rumored in the Globe and Mail yesterday. Stock got halted today. Press release from Torstar came out. It's not a definitive deal, this overbid, this offer, which the Torstar board deemed reasonably expected to constitute or lead to a superior proposal. That's where they're at now. It's still subject to due diligence and a definitive agreement. We do have the initial Torstar deal vote coming up in a couple weeks. So this will be something quick. We'll figure out if this is deemed a superior proposal in which Nordstar is given their right to match, typically, 3 to 5 business days. And if they do, then they'll bump their bid to the 72 cents cash per share, which is 14% more than Nordstar's currently paying. So kind of the crux of this story is that Torstar had a negative implied enterprise value. Their Nordstar was basically using Torstar's cash to take out minority shareholders, which kind of sucks as a minority shareholder. But when we got in, the merger yield was about 20% annualized. You had good downside protection given cash on the balance sheet, and it was a solid deal. And now you have this tremendous upside optionality of other intelligent investors coming along and being like, hey, this company is worth more than negative 20 million. Let's do something about it. And it looks like the Proud Brothers are doing something about it, trying to get their hands on that $70 million in cash. In addition to that cash, they have a bunch of, Torstar has a bunch of valuable non-core assets, don't they?
Yeah, they have a few investments in other firms, other startups as well, which are obviously of some value. It becomes a little bit more difficult to ascribe a value to those. And the other aspect is that, I guess, not to overlook, is that, yes, we weren't fans that it was being acquired for less than its net cash. However, the company was operating at a loss. Mm-hmm. And so
melting ice cube.
Yes. And so part of the thesis is that whoever does acquire it, they have to have a view on how they're going to turn around to at least get it to, cash flow break even. But as it, just looking at this situation, it's kind of a good example of how Warren Buffett's really well known, both him and Munger are really well known for really thinking about things in probability trees. And what Buffett's especially well known for, and which always impresses reporters, is his ability to do probabilities, especially multi-level probabilities, in his head in real time, which is a unique skill to Buffett, as well as anybody that is very good with mathematics. But when looking at this situation, so you really just have to look at through a variety of steps here. Number one, when you're looking to value this, put a value on what this stock should be trading at right now, well, and obviously the market views this as legitimate, as the stock did close at 72 cents. So there is some legitimacy here, as well as Torstar did acknowledge the offer. But what they first need is an actual formal offer from the new bidders. Then you'd have to ascribe a probability to Torstar's board then deeming it a superior offer. And if it does come through as a formal bid, that's pretty much guaranteed that unless there's all sorts of financing conditions or things of that nature, that it's going to be viewed as a superior offer, as it's just simply higher. But sometimes there will be some complexity if there is other conditions involved. Then at that point, as you had mentioned, Julian, NordStar would have the ability to match that, or else the company would move forward with this completing this new deal. If NordStar matches, perhaps the new bidders bump their price. As you had mentioned, the net cash amount is in the 80 cents range. So potentially that could be a range that these bidders are willing to go to, but it really depends on their view on post-closing, some of those non-core assets, what the value of those are in post-closing operational losses or cash flow positive gains that they're able to squeeze from it. But overall, you're looking at that situation, you're looking at the probabilities in different branches of the tree. But at the end of the day, like I had mentioned before, and you had mentioned, Julian, we love a good bidding war. So hopefully we're able to see one here again.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. Nothing I like better than getting an overbid in a merger arbitrage situation. That's really where the big returns are made. Obviously, for disclosure purposes, we are long a Torstar in the Accelerate Arbitrage Fund. And obviously, we're liking this. But I caution listeners, as you indicated, this is not a definitive deal, subject to due diligence, not deemed superior yet. However, if they satisfy that due diligence condition, which I believe they will, then they'll likely strike the deal here at 72 cents. And then an investor's got to think, well, what's the probability that NordStar would match or even beat this proposal, leading to a bidding war? Well, unfortunately, NordStar previously indicated they would not participate in an auction process. That's obviously, you can't hold them to that. Who knows? Perhaps it's just talk to discourage others or game theory with the Torstar board of directors. But we'll see. It's a really, really exciting situation, one worthwhile watching. And if you're participating from the long side, certainly that is a great spot to be in. But that's about it for us this week on episode 76 of the Absolute Return Podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. And if you did, check out more at absolutereturnpodcast.com. For sure, go on to Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, give us a good rating. And then definitely follow us on Twitter. Mike, where can they find you on the old Twitter machine?
My handle is m_Kesslering.
And mine is at Julian Klimochko, KlyMochko. We wish you all the best of luck in your trading, investing, and speculating. Short selling too, perhaps. That being said, all the best. We'll chat with you next week. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.